Thanks for listening to High Education. I'm Amelia Day, lifetime educator and social justice activist, recording from my studio apartment. Today, I'm joined by Megan, a foster parent who has experience working with students in an emotionally disturbed unit. We will be discussing the foster care system, how it affects families and students, and how teachers can help families and students find educational success even during trying times. We did have technical difficulties during the interview process, so I apologize for the audio quality. The interview process will be changed in the future to ensure the highest audio quality possible. All right, guys, I'm so excited to introduce my guest. Her name is Megan, and today we're going to be talking about foster care. So, Megan, if you will tell us a bit about yourself, specifically your professional background, but a bit about you personally as well.
Hi. So I first started working with kids when I became an ABA therapist, which is applied behavior analysis, where we work on improving behavior such as social skills, learning skills, and communication. But basically, we use that science aspect of it and the research part to increase desirable behaviors and decrease undesirable behaviors. So that's where my behavior background really first started. I worked at a center for about 6 years, and then I did in-home therapy for 2 years. And while I was doing in-home, I became really interested in teaching. So I started working towards my teaching certification, and I became a SPED teacher, where I was working in the emotionally disturbed unit. And that's where I learned more about behavior and when it's related to trauma, which I found was really different than my previous job as an ABA therapist. But when I became a teacher, my husband and I had already been about 6 months into the process of getting licensed to foster. It was something I kind of had a passion for, and we've always really had it in the back of our minds. So once we were ready, we just kind of jumped into it and started getting certified. So it took us about a year to get licensed. We got our first set of girls when I was about 4 months into my teaching career. And then I taught for another year. And then after that, I became a full-time foster mom.
Hey, so you mentioned that you became a foster parent during your first year of teaching as you and your husband decided that you were ready. So how did you know that you guys were ready to become a foster parent?
We've always wanted kids, but when we got married, I think we wanted to enjoy being married first for a while. We certainly didn't want to rush into anything. So once we were kind of done doing some traveling and doing some things that we wanted to do, and we felt that we were, stable, that's when we started the process.
Great. And I know that this, anytime you have a child or adopt a child, or especially when you're fostering, it can kind of change the dynamics of the relationships that you're in already. So how do you feel becoming a foster parent affected your relationship with your husband?
It was a big learning curve for sure. It really helps to talk beforehand and kind of get some things laid out too. Some guidelines. There, it's really important for when you do have foster kids to focus on self-care and focus on your relationship. So taking date nights, taking breaks. I know in the system, there's a thing called respite care. And it's where a lot of agencies will encourage you to take, because we all need a break sometimes. And respite care is a way for foster families to give their child to another family for a weekend, basically just to babysit, and they're certified so that foster family can have a break. So yeah, it's something that we really had to navigate through, and we, you know, had to be like, okay, well, let's have these date nights on these days. And it was a process.
Great. And that's actually a great segue, because you mentioned some advice you have for encouraging self-care and taking care of those relationships that you had prior to becoming a foster family. Do you have any advice for potential foster parents who are just starting the process, whether it's about self-care or relationship care or anything you think is important for them to keep in mind?
Well, since we're talking about self-care, I would just really advocate and make sure that you're really putting self-care first, because if you're not taking care of yourself when you have a foster child, then that foster child's not being taken care of. And they know, they can sense it, that something's not right. So it's really, really important to take care of yourself, take those date nights, take those breaks. You have a child in your home that's been through a lot of trauma and they have a lot of baggage. So sometimes it's really difficult to navigate through that. So it's really good that you focus on yourself and make sure that you are 100% for that child, and take breaks. And I think another thing that I would suggest or advise is, can be a really long process. It took my husband and I a year to become licensed. And even after we were done, I was so ready to get a kid, and waiting was the hardest thing. We had to wait for about a month till we got our first placement. So just being patient, becoming a foster parent. And once you do get a foster kid, just make sure that you really focus on self-care.
I'm really glad that you pointed out that self-care is so essential. I did an episode on secondhand trauma that teachers receive just from being around different students who have trauma, their backgrounds, and hearing about it. So I think that obviously the difference between a teacher and a foster parent is that the foster parent is taking on more personal responsibility and is more likely to hear more of what happened to that child. So I think that's really important, and I'm glad that you brought that up. Could you describe the process to become a foster parent?
Yeah, so the process can be kind of long. So I can't speak for every state, but I believe the minimum requirement for most of them is 20 hours of training. And it also depends on the agency that you go through. You have to go through a foster agency. And I know our foster agency requires 30 hours of training, but a lot of foster agencies now are doing online, not because of COVID, just because I think it's just more accessible for families to take online classes. But there's a lot of things that you have to do also in order to become a foster parent. You have to get a background check. You have to get your CPR and first aid. You have to get a fire, health, and safety inspection. So there's a lot of things that go into it for the classes or training. There's various medication classes that you have to take, just, you know, administering it and making sure that you know what to do with psychotropic medications. There's behavior classes, trauma intervention classes, normalcy classes, and medical consent training. So there's just a lot of aspects to it. It seems like a lot, but once you get into it, it just kind of flows.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that there is a pretty good flow for that. Could you describe your favorite class that you had to take?
My favorite class, I really enjoyed the trauma class just because I was a teacher for emotionally disturbed students. So I think trauma played a lot into it. So I always just love learning about that. I also loved the norm class, you know, normalcy to us may be different, you know, to a kid that comes from a different home. So we basically learned what they do at home that we really need to integrate into our home. So we don't watch a lot of TV. We eat pretty healthy. We don't go out to eat a lot versus a kid in another home may go to McDonald's every night. So you have to incorporate that, maybe take them to McDonald's once a week. Just provide some normalcy so they're comfortable in your home. It's a lot for a child to leave their home and come into a completely different environment.
Definitely, yeah, because not only are they coming into a new environment, they don't have any known allies at that point. I mean, obviously you are an ally, but to a student or a child who maybe is coming out of a traumatic experience, you might not seem initially like an ally. So it's great that you are putting in the work to kind of bridge the different lifestyle. Can you compare the process now to how it has changed due to COVID-19?
I don't know how much the process has changed due to COVID. I know a lot of the classes were already transitioning to going online. So I know I'm pretty sure that they're pretty much all online now. I know when we did have kids and things started getting shut down. We went to online visitations and online phone calls and meetings, and that made it a little difficult. But I think everything is pretty much back to normal.
Yeah, I just remember seeing some headlines saying that foster care systems are being adversely affected by COVID-19, and I'm sure it's affecting the number of families
yeah.
for it. Maybe their process got interrupted. So it's interesting to
yeah.
see how COVID-19 just affects every aspect of our lives.
I know. And I know it was really difficult too, because there were families that really relied on child care. And then they no longer had that child care when everything was shut down. So it was really hard for families. And I know CPS was having a really hard time placing children in homes. And we even got an email asking if we would accept any like COVID positive children, if we would be willing to be put on a list. So I know it has been very difficult for CPS with placements and trying to find, you know, homes and such for the kids.
Definitely, because it's difficult for CPS on like normal days to make sure that they're providing that home for those kids. It's really sad to hear how badly it is affecting the foster care system.
Yeah.
So you are a unique person because you have a background with working with kids with special needs. Has this impacted your experience as a foster parent?
Yeah, it definitely has. I think with my background in ABA, it's really laid a solid foundation with managing behaviors and providing positive reinforcement. And then once I became a teacher for emotionally disturbed students, I really learned about the trauma and how trauma affects the brain, and how different you have to almost treat kids with trauma because their brains are different. So I would say my background completely prepared me for being a foster parent. And again, with the training, all the classes that you have to take, they do make sure that you are prepared, you know, to be in any situations and to get to know your foster child and such.
Definitely. I'm glad to hear that they are taking the initiative to ensure that they're training the parents before they're placing a child in their home. Obviously, we don't want people who are inexperienced or lacking in the training to be put in situations where they might not be successful.
I think kids who have been through trauma, they're misunderstood. And I think a lot of people place high expectations on kids sometimes. So when you have a misunderstood kid, and you don't know about trauma or how to handle those situations, I think it makes it a lot harder on yourself and the kid.
Definitely, yeah. Can you explain to those of us who know little about foster care some of your biggest concerns on this topic?
Yeah, the system is a very complex system. There's a lot of people involved, and I think sometimes foster parents can feel a little deluded or lost in the commotion. But sometimes decisions are made, and you just kind of have to go with the flow, whether you like that decision or not, or whether you think it's best for the child or not. It's definitely hard just doing your job and loving the child. Is that the absolute best that you can do? I know, did you watch on Netflix? There was a Netflix documentary, Gabriel Fernandez. Did you watch that?
I haven't seen it, but I will definitely look into it.
Basically, yeah, about a boy that died, and CPS had been called repeatedly because the child was being neglected, and CPS ultimately didn't do anything. And then, of course, ultimately the child died, and then there was this big investigation. But in that documentary, the Netflix documentary, there was a professional. I don't remember what they did, but what they said really stuck with me. And they made a statement that sometimes the system focuses more on the parents' rights rather than the children's rights. And I think with our experience, I feel that to be true. Sometimes it feels it's more about the child returning home versus what's best for the child. And I think that's really, really hard to be a part of. But it's also very rewarding because you're planting that seed in the child. And you'll never get to see it grow, but you did plant a seed and you made a difference in that child's life. And they will forever remember that. And just know, even though it doesn't feel like it, but you have made a difference.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad that you point that out, because I've read some heartbreaking memoirs of foster families who maybe were looking to adopt the child, and then unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on the circumstances, but most of what I've read, it's been unfortunately the child has been placed back into the home that they were taken out of. And I do believe that sometimes there is a bias in our system to try to keep a family together when it's not necessarily to benefit the child. So it's disheartening, but I'm glad that you left that on a good note, talking about how you are making a difference, because I truly believe that's true. A lot of what I focus on this podcast is obviously education based, and I feel like you're the best person to talk on this since you have both teaching experience and experience as a foster parent. So can you talk about how teachers can better serve their students who are in foster care?
There's several things that teachers can do. I would say is just to have a really structured classroom so the child knows the routines and they know what's going to happen next. It's really important for kids' trauma to feel like they have a role, and knowing what's going to happen next, I think, is really helpful for them. And I think for teachers to really communicate with the foster parents and get with them on setting goals, because this kid has just been from their home and their family, and they're placed, most often placed, in a home they've never been in with people they've never, you know, seen or know. And now they're in a school that they don't know anybody. So as an adult, if that were to happen to me, I would just be so scared to be in that situation. So I cannot imagine how a child feels. So just building those relationships with the child and the foster parents, and also just being flexible. There's a lot that goes into a child's schedule when they're in foster care. So I don't know, sometimes they might come, they might have a visit that day, and then the next day, it might just be a day. Usually after visitations, behaviors start to come out. It brings back trauma to the child. So for the next couple days after visitation, it just might be a really hard time for them. So maybe just changing some test dates or homework dates would be really helpful and beneficial for the foster parents and the child, because they're just, we don't know what's going through their heads, experiencing a lot of trauma. So I think just being flexible would really be helpful.
Yeah, and that's a very easy thing, I think, for a teacher to accommodate, is just flexibility with due dates. I'm encouraging every student to have flexibility during this time of COVID-19, just because we're all experiencing trauma. So that's great advice to give. I know it's a different level of trauma. Obviously, the students who are experiencing foster care.
Forms, and it affects everyone differently. So I mean, it is, you have a really good point. You know, what we're all going through is a form of trauma.
Yeah, exactly. What do you hope that listeners learn from you about foster care?
I am such an advocate for foster care. I would love for everybody to do it, although I know not, you know, the right move for everybody. But if you just have this interest, then I just prompt you to just take another step and just check out some agencies and ask some questions. There's really no harm in that. Again, it's not for everyone, but if you do feel like it's just a little bit for you, then just go to that next step and just start asking questions. If you don't feel like you want to commit to being a foster parent but still want to help, you can always become a respite care provider. You do have to get certification for that. However, it's less strenuous than getting your actual license to become a foster parent. be really helpful to foster parents, because sometimes, of course, like I said, when foster parents need a break, they find some respite care providers in their community, and they can, you know, leave the child for a weekend, or if they need to go out of town for a weekend, they can leave the child with them. So that would be, if you don't want to commit to being a foster parent, that's something else you can do to contribute, just to help out.
I love that. And I especially love that for people who maybe are on the fence about becoming a foster parent or not.
Yeah. So if you just want to try it too, you can start there and just kind of get toes wet with it.
Exactly. Since we're talking about people being on the fence and whatnot, maybe you could share a story about what the most rewarding part of being a foster parent is.
There's a lot of rewarding part. I think just seeing the kids grow and develop has been so rewarding. I will say our first set of girls, they had experienced so much trauma that you can't even imagine the trauma that they had. So it was so interesting to see them blossom and kind of break through those barriers and just grow. It was a beautiful thing to see. We took our second group of kiddos. We had three kids, and we had a baby and a two-year-old and a five-year-old. And it was so fun and just seeing them grow together. And a lot of the times when you get kiddos, there's not a lot of empathy. So it's really good to see that empathy start showing, especially when their siblings, you know, watching them like help out, start to bond, is really nice to see. It's just rewarding all around, just to see the changes in the kids and just see their happy faces.
Yeah, and I love that you brought up empathy. I did an episode, that was my second episode, on empathy and growing it and how we're all capable of becoming more empathetic than we are in our current state, especially if we have trauma in our background. Those who have trauma are often the ones who don't feel the strongest empathy because they feel so isolated.
Right, and empathy is taught. So, and it just takes one person to teach that skill. So for all you know, you could be that one person that shows them empathy and therefore teaches them empathy. So that's a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, definitely. On the flip side of that, because I do want to give a realistic picture of what it's like to be a foster parent for our listeners, what would you say is the most challenging part of being a foster parent?
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges. I guess it depends on what aspect you're asking. I mean, there's on the kids' side, of course, you know, the kids that you don't know the kids that are coming. You don't know their background unless they've been in foster care before. So basically, when you get a kid, you're learning a lot. And sometimes it takes months for behaviors to come out and for you just to kind of evaluate kind of what's going on in their little heads. So sometimes that's hard to see the trauma unfold, but again, it's rewarding to see it heal as well. The CPS side of it, it's just really hard. Like I said, you don't have a lot of control, and a lot of the times you feel like an ant on a mountain. You don't get a lot of say, and your opinion doesn't really matter. And there's a lot of people involved that are in and out of your house. You have your foster agency, you have the attorneys, you have CPS, you have the CASA worker. There's just a lot of people involved, and I think sometimes things get lost in, you know, translation. So it's just balancing that and navigating that can sometimes be difficult.
Yes, I can definitely attest to the fact that the more people involved in anything, the more complicated it's going to become. And I think every teacher or parent really can agree with that.
Right, right. And there's a lot of people involved. It's a very complex system. So again, I think the more complex it is, the harder it can be to navigate sometimes.
Yes, definitely. I want to thank Megan for joining us today. If you enjoyed what we talked about, be sure to like and subscribe to wherever you listen to podcasts. Proceeds from this episode will be donated to Save the Children. You can learn more about how you can support us and what we talked about today by visiting us at highedpod.com. Join us next time as I plan to discuss strategies for improving community relationships with our schools. If you have a topic you would like to discuss with us, please visit highedpod.com to contact us. We would love to hear from you.